Is he still distracted?
Yeah, yeah. He's still playing video games right now.
Excellent. All right, get the door. Get the door.
Okay. Got it, got it.
Hey, this is pretty nice. What is this, an entire underground bunker complex?
Yeah, my goodness.
When he said Spirit Blade Underground, I thought he was just talking about his office. All right, what is that, the back computer? Oh, Drew, it's got buttons.
Oh, ooh, can I press that big red one over there?
Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Hi, welcome to a special bootleg edition of the Spirit Blade Underground. I'm Winston Crutchfield.
And I'm Drew Rubb.
And Pater is playing Extra Life, and that's really the only thing in the way of announcements that we've got. Extra Life Weekend Marathon is going on right now. Pater is playing video games for charity. If you get a chance, if you'd like to help out, it's always a good time to stop in and donate something to the Extra Life Foundation, and that is... they benefit children's hospitals. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yep. Okay. Yep. For medical care for kids who otherwise would not be able to afford it.
We do have geek topics to talk about. Drew is going to get into a TV show that he's watched and I haven't, plus a couple of segments. We've got a Trek Talk segment from Matt McKinney, and we've got Ken from Honolulu will be giving us another retro movie review, which is going to be pretty cool, and you never know what else could happen, so stick around. Okay, Drew, you are an X-Men fan from way back in the day, and
yep.
You've been watching The Gifted from day one.
It is the X-Men on TV. It All does right. exist in the official X-Men universe.
Yeah, give me a short summary.
Short summary is that a mom and dad find out that their children are mutants. Of course, in this universe, mutants are not exactly accepted. The father works as a federal prosecutor who prosecutes crimes committed by mutants.
By mutants using mutant powers specifically.
Correct. Correct. In their universe, any damage caused by a mutant using their power, and it doesn't matter how small that damage is pretty much sort of like a Class A felony.
So this is about the family going on the run, because the previews I got really kind of make this look like a mutant version of Shadowhunters, where it's all about the teenagers, and the teenagers are the ones in the are the heroes of the show and all that. Is that what's going on with The Gifted?
Not with The Gifted. With The Gifted, both the father and the mother play rather central roles in the development of the story.
Okay, so tell me where things are going. I mean, you can only, I guess The Fugitive did it for years and years, but you can only sustain the band on the run thing for so long. So where are they going with this? This isn't going to be a superhero action show, is it?
No, not really, and it's also not going to be The Fugitive or anything like that. Within just the first... we're up to episode 5 right now, and it started out, they made contact with the Mutant Underground, which works as the underground railroad to get mutants to places of safety. And his initial idea was to, once they met these guys, to get them out of America and into Mexico.
So are they doing the Incredible Hulk thing, going from place to place, saving the mutant of the week? Is that what's going on?
No. The mutant, it focuses on a small core group of mutants. Two names that are really familiar are, of course, Polaris, Lorna Dane, and Blink. But then there's a couple others that are involved as well. So it's not a mutant of the week. It's just the same core group that keeps working. But they're being chased down by Sentinel Services. It's kind of a competition between who's going to get captured or rescued. So no, we're not seeing that mutant of the week.
Tell me about the way the show is developing themes.
Again, it is the X universe. Hey, it's whatever's different from us. We're going to fear it. We're going to hate it.
And on the surface, that's usually presented as this is a bad reaction. Is that what's going on with The Gifted?
I think what we're seeing is, you know, we get some of those that are dead set on, yeah, this is bad. These guys are bad. But you also occasionally see the humans who don't think mutants are bad. Just about what you would expect any time today. You have extremists who are dead set on anything different is wrong. And then you have people who are, it's different, but that's okay.
So who is this show going to appeal to? Is this for superhero fans? Is this for action fans? Is this an intense family drama? Is this a teen drama? What's going on? Who's meant to watch this show?
I definitely don't think it's a teen drama in that it's only going to appeal to the teens. It's definitely going to, I think it will definitely appeal to fans of X-Men and the X-Universe. If you're looking for a good family drama, this might be for you. Just depends on how much of the sci-fi part of it, you know, you really get into. If you're a mutant fan, comic book fan, I think you're really going to like this one. I think they are trying to make it as a decent broad ranged appeal, but I think it's really going to, if you're a big comic book fan, big superhero fan, you should like this one.
So we're talking, is this an action show then? Are we talking fight scenes, chase scenes, things blowing up?
Yes, to all of those. There are plenty of chase scenes, fight scenes. The use of special effects for mutant powers is very well done.
It looks really subtle. I noticed on the previews when Polaris used her power, it had a kind of greenish aura, which matches the mm-hmm. comic books mm-hmm. really well. But it wasn't big, it wasn't flashy. It was just kind of very, very subtle, very, very translucent.
It is.
And that strikes me as a good choice, especially for something on a TV show budget.
Mm-hmm. The biggest effect that they're using right now is for Blink and her portals, and for Eclipse and his light abilities that he can emit from his hands. Anything from a bright light for a flashlight up to a gigantic sunspot, which could blind you, to a very focused laser beam out of his hands. Those two have really gotten the most out of their powers abilities. Everybody else is very subtle. Polaris is one, and I can't think of the other girl's name, but she has the ability to affect memories, and all she does is kind of blow a purplish color smoke out of her from her breath. You know, so yeah, it's very subtle, and they're not doing it over the top, and they're not doing it all the time.
So when they're not fighting with the cops, what are they fighting about? Because this strikes me like it's going to be one of those shows where the main cast spends a lot of time fighting with each other. Is that what's going on?
There's not a whole lot of fighting with each other. If they're not physically fighting with the cops, they're trying to figure out what's the best way to keep our population safe. One of the things is that Sentinel Services, they tend to take mutants, and then these mutants just disappear off the face of the earth.
Is that something they're developing, or is that just a boogeyman right now?
They're developing that one. If there's one thing about this show that really surprises me, is how incredibly well written it is in the character development. I'm seeing strong performances from all the principal actors. The supporting actors are really, really great as well, but it's nice to see how they are developing as individuals, and that's one of the more refreshing things. Was I expecting a lot of flash and, oh, let's throw a bunch of superpowers in? You know, they're keeping that minimal. They're really developing the characters, and so that's what is making me enjoy this show so much.
Is that what keeps bringing you back to it week after week?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, at some point we have to ask the question, what is in this show for Christian geeks?
There is definitely a strong point being made about family with the Strucker family, and that's the father and mother who find out their kids are mutants. He is so willing to do whatever it takes to save his family. From a new dad standpoint and a Christian standpoint, I want to be able to do whatever I can to take care of my family.
Well, the trumpet of family values is one that everybody can get behind, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's hard to for somebody to hold that up and say, we stand behind family values, and there be a public outcry against that.
Yeah.
That's just not going to happen. The one thing that strikes me immediately about this incarnation that is different from the others is the daughter is talking to the parents, and she says that's how it happens. It happens in times of stress. It happens all of a sudden. One minute you're normal, and the next you're a mutant. That's not the exact quote, mm-hmm. but I think that's the sense of it. It strikes me that this is really an excellent platform for talking about Christianity, for talking about election, you know, some really heavy doctrines, because there is no chance that any of these people are not mutants. If you test them, they've got the mutant gene. Before they were born, from the moment they came into existence, they were this person.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know that they were this person until some point of stress has driven them to the point where they realize that, where they access it, where they become that person. Sometimes they embrace it. Sometimes they reject it. But at the end of the day, they are still a mutant, and there's not really anything they can do to change that. One of the principal tenets of Orthodox Christianity is that salvation depends upon God's election, and that before we are born, God has chosen us. Literally, the Bible says, from the foundation of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And whether we know it or not, God has chosen us to be his people. We don't realize that. We as humans don't realize that until some point of stress drives us to the point where we hit the ground on our knees and cry out, you know, and at some point that will be made clear to us and we can embrace it or we can reject it. But either way, the grace of God is going to be in effect in our lives. I think probably the more important point for geeks is that we tend to land on the side of the mutants, right?
I would say, yeah.
You know, the common comic book, the common geek land says, you know, the world doesn't understand me. The world hates and fears me, and I'm just trying to get along. And I look at that, and I guess there's an argument to be made there, but I've always come down on the senator's side in the first X-Men movie. He says, you see people that are different, and all I see are guns in our schools. You know, these are people with fantastic, destructive, harmful powers. Mm-hmm. And they need to be controlled, especially if they can't control themselves or aren't willing to control themselves.
Yeah.
Now, there's a, and of course, this is, there's a lot of argument to be made a lot of different ways there. But one of the things that the producers, the creators of The Gifted were talking about is that everybody in the show is a hero and everybody in the show is a villain. When I get a chance to, I think it's going to be that way. It's not just that the government is evil and we have to run from them, and it's not just going to be that the mutants are innocent and persecuted whatever and we should lay off them. I think they're really struggling to hit that very, very difficult gray area. Any last thoughts?
Nope, brain just shut down.
Yeah, that happens. All right, well, tell you what, Pater is still playing video games, so let's poke around his computer and see what else we can find.
I'm telling you, I still want to press that big red button.
Scanning for Christian geeks. Subject located. Verifying status. Christian geek status verified. Begin data transmission.
Hello. This is Ken from Honolulu with a movie review. This review contains spoilers. The movie is Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. Was made in 2015, directed by Christopher Landon, Michael Landon's son, starring Ty Sheridan as Ben, Logan Miller as Carter, Sarah Dumont as Denise. Synopsis: three scouts on the eve of their last campout discover the true meaning of friendship when they save the town from zombies. Review: this movie is a bit crude. It has a lot of crude jokes, a lot of crude gags, but it is still kind of funny. It's a horror comedy type of deal. It's aimed at boys in the age range of, oh, I'd say 12 to 15 maybe, and it hits all of the points that would excite the imagination of a boy about that age. It has beautiful women, girls actually, and it has them saving the day, and it has no parents in the film. You won't see any parents. You'll see a couple of adults, but that's it. This is a film, as I say, aimed for that age range. However, adults can like the film too. As I said, it's a bit crude. One of the main characters, he likes the F word. And there is some very crude sight gags. I won't go into them. If you watch the movie, you'll see. There is a very brief shot of a woman's breasts. However, they are zombie breasts. So I don't know if that kind of thing turns you on, but for a kid that age, that would be exciting, I suppose. The movie is okay, I guess, but it's best if watched with a bunch of your friends. We did it with a bunch of our friends and had a great time. And we were just watching it just because it was fun. There's not much CG in it. It's mostly practical gags and practical effects. If you don't like blood and guts, then this is definitely not the movie for you. There is blood and guts starting from the first few minutes of the film, and it just continues on. As I said, this is a film aimed at younger boys. It has a beautiful, very hot young woman who joins in their fight to fight against the zombies. And she's as tough as nails. Really fun. She is a partner to them. She doesn't take over, and she doesn't allow them to take over, but she's a partner with them. There's the three main characters who are scouts. Although I don't know that they are... I don't know that they're affiliated with the Boy Scouts of America. They never say one way or another. Two of the boys want to get out of Scouts because they think it's lame. Well, they want to get in with the cool crowd is what it is. And their third friend, there's only three of them, and their third friend is kind of a geeky dork, and they're trying to ditch him so that they can get to a party to be with the cool kids, and they find out that just isn't really where it is. There is a moral to the film, which is don't diss your friends, because good friends are really hard to come by, and stand by them and back them up and be with them. So there is a moral to it. There's a lot of sight gags, as I said. And there's a lot of weird stuff that really goes on, such as they even have a zombie deer in it, which is kind of strange, and zombie cats. I don't think I've ever seen that in movies, but the three boys, they get together, they realize that they are the last best hope for their town. And so the girl goes off, she's looking for the military to help, and the three boys decide they're going to man up, and they're going to improvise weapons, and they're going to go save the town from the zombies. And the final fight takes place in an old school gym or something similar. And it's a senior party. Secret senior party. And all the zombies go in there and they start attacking everybody. And then the boys come in and save the day. And of course, one of the characters, he saves the day and he gets the girl. So it's your basic teen thing. Preteen fantasy movie. It's fun. It's a good movie. It's something that you can watch with the family if you don't mind the crudeness of it. Michael Landon says, ooh. Christopher Landon says, oh, he can make a R-rated version of the Goonies. Well, that's not quite like that, I guess. But this is a movie to sit down and watch if you've got not much else to do. It's, as I said, it's fun if you watch it with a bunch of people. We had probably 7 or 8 people sitting watching it, and each person saw something different in the film. And they pointed stuff out. Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that. You know, and the stuff that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. One of the blood and gore gags that they have is one of the boys is fighting a zombie in a bar. They're in a bar. And the zombie's going to eat him or gnash at him or whatever they were doing. And he sees a bottle that's broken in half. He grabs it by the neck and he shoves it into the zombie's forehead. And blood starts pouring out of the neck of the bottle onto this guy's face. So, like I say, it's kind of crude, kind of yucky for some people. We just sat around and laughed. And there are jump scares. However, the jump scares are telegraphed, because, example, guy is walking in the woods by himself and he sees a bush rustling. So he walks over to it and something jumps out at him. Well, you know something's going to jump out at him because it's part of the horror movie thing. When the bushes when the bushes rattle and the guy walks over to it. So you're ready for the jump scares. So this is a movie that's fun to watch, but as I said, it is kind of crude. So if you do sit down to watch, or if you're going to let your kids watch, just be aware that it is crude. There is profanity. There is some sexual content to it. So just be aware of that before you sit down and watch the movie. Thank you for listening to my review. This is Ken from Honolulu. Aloha.
All right, well, Drew, things are quiet right now, so let's go explore the rest of this complex, see what we can find. You go left, I'll go right, and hopefully nobody sneaks in on us while we're out exploring, right?
Peter? Peter, where are you? He's gone. I'm free. Free. I think I'm going to go see what Peter's doing.
Hello and welcome to Trek Talk. This is Matt McKinney.
Matt.
And so
remember what the judge said about that.
Yes.
Yeah, if I'm remembering the words he used correctly, I think it were class four war crime.
Oh, yeah, I know. Okay, fine. I won't sing. Well, I thought I was going to be clever and sing you a musical episode of Trek Talk, but I guess that won't work now.
No.
Star Trek has a lot of great music to it, a lot of great instrumental music. However, what it has a bad history of doing is non-instrumental music. And we're going to look at these and laugh at them and on rare, rare, rare occasions even appreciate it. But for the most part, we're going to be laughing because Star Trek's full of the bad. And here's a few examples of the bad from the original series, in which they were still in the it's gotta be musical theater school of thinking.
Gonna live, not die. Gonna live, not die.
Uhura really wanted to sing a whole lot.
Oh, on the Starship Enterprise, there's someone who's in Satan's guise.
The skies are green and glowing where my heart is.
And of course, there was a time that Spock was forced to sing by telekinetic alien Greeks.
Take care, young ladies, and value your wine. Be watchful of young men in their velvet prime.
What's worse is that Leonard Nimoy followed this up after Star Trek with...
In the middle of the earth, in the land of Shire, lives a brave little hobbit whom we all admire. With his long wooden pipe, fuzzy woolly toes, lives in a hobbit hole and everybody knows him. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, he's only
beating dog. And that's not even the worst of it.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. The touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man they think I am. I'm a rock it man.
One more time.
Please, not again.
Rocket man, burning out his fuse out here alone.
When it came time to do the movies, the original crew only dared sing one time. But what it lacked for in quantity, it made up for in quality. Or lack thereof.
Don't say I didn't warn you. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily,
lightly down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily,
light. Come on, Spock.
the Next Generation didn't really do a whole lot of musical theater. They had one actually serious and moving moment where Miles O'Brien, who was at that time just a glorified extra, had to deal with a former captain of his who was on a mission of vengeance, or so it appeared at the time. And he's thinking about old songs and glory, and at the end we hear...
Was that song of his? One he always sang, one I liked. The minstrel boy to the war has gone. In the ranks of death you will find him. His father's sword he hath girded on, and his wild harp's love behind him. Land of song, said the warrior bard, though all the world betrays thee, one sword at least thy rights shall guard, one faithful harp shall praise thee. I'm not going to win this one, am I, Chief?
That's one of those rare examples of this being done well, and they're not even doing it for fun. This is a serious moment, but it's actually very good. Of course, the Next Generation's movies, on the other hand, would not go so well, as 3 out of the 4 featured singing. Not coincidentally, they were the 3 out of the 4 that people generally looked down upon.
Life forms, you tiny little life forms, you precious little life forms, where are you?
A British tar is a soaring soul, as free as a mountain bird. His energetic fist should be ready to resist a dictatorial word. Sing, Wolf, sing.
My old blue skies, smiling at me.
Irving Berlin.
Nothing but blue skies do I see.
Yes, First Contact had a musical sequence, but they were just hologram characters and they were singing well.
Try and look as if you're having a good time.
Deep Space Nine, they shied away for a while, but round about season 5 we got to hear Klingon singing. Oh, we'd heard Klingon opera before and...
Malota!
What is that dreadful noise?
Yeah. But then that was meant to sound bad on purpose. Now, tell me this doesn't sound awesome.
Oi, Kellis, Poo, Claude.
Oi, Pook, Me, Poo. Yappo, Mappo, Tishoo, Wee. Me, Shoo, Me, Poo.
Marcha!
Shoo, Mada, E, Mata, Choo. The Bay, E, Mata, Wo, Koo. Mappo, Shapers, E, Joe, Kita. Mappo, Madima, Marek, Mata, Tapu, Mabepo, Machuta. Mappo.
And then in season 6, we were introduced to Vic Fontaine, a very divisive character that a lot of people don't like for exactly the same reason. He brought a lot of musical numbers. He's a Frank Sinatra, 60s lounge singer guy, and a lot of people don't like that. I go up and down, but his first episode, His Way, had 5 musical numbers, and they all just stop the story right where they go. And that's the problem, is a lot of Vic Fontaine's musical numbers stop the story. That's what a lot of these musical numbers do, actually, especially all the way back to the original series, when it was just, hey, let's stop the action and listen to Uhura. Now it's, let's stop the action and listen to Vic.
If you can use some exotic booze at a bar in far Bombay.
One possible exception is It's Only a Paper Moon, which was a very good episode in its own right, and they would actually use Vic Fontaine for montaging while the story went on over the music instead of stopping the episode.
Say it's only a paper moon, sailing over cardboard sea, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Plus, also, it was a good song and thematically fit. With Voyager, they decided to use music mostly for fun, where it was almost always in the hands of the Doctor.
Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah. Someone's in the kitchen, I know.
Except for this.
Not to mention the classics of Klingon opera.
Very well, Mr. Neelix. You win.
And the Doctor stopped that, so we can thank him. Because the Doctor was easily one of the best characters on Voyager. And he really got into singing opera. That became one of his big things. And they did it well. They did a whole episode about him getting caught up in singing opera, being a star on a planet. And they even use it to tease his lovelorn romance that never was with Seven of Nine.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray.
Enterprise, well, they had their opening theme, and that was kind of odd enough. I don't think there was any time that anyone sang on Enterprise. I could be wrong. Please correct me if I am, but I don't think they ever did. The reboot movies just give us some source music. Most famously, of course, the Beastie Boys. Especially in Star Trek Beyond, where the Beastie Boys ended up saving the galaxy. Well, a signal buried in a Beastie Boys song, but you get the idea. Yeah, that's it. This is mostly just a sampler plate.
Live long and prosper.
Oh yeah, give me some of that funky Spock, y'all. He the Vulcan that was born to rock, y'all. Playing harp and the crunking on the Tron, ya. Don't let him go all pond fire on ya.
Funky Spock.
What?
Funky Spock.
Say what?
Give me some of that funky Spock.
Well, oh, freaking on the funky Spock.
Funky Spock.
Good Lord.
A lot of weird music in Star Trek. A lot of stopping the episode or the movie just to have a musical number for no reason, but that the actors wanted to show off their pipes. And sometimes they were showing off good pipes.
You came along and everything started to hum.
And sometimes they weren't.
She likes the free, fresh wind in her hair. Life without care. She's broken, but it's okay. Hates California. It's cold and it's damp.
So, that's about it. So we'll see you next time on Trek Talk.
Ow, stop. No, I'm sorry. No, please, not again.
I told you we should have taken that left turn at Albuquerque. Well, monitor room looks quiet enough. Oh, wait, something new's happening. What's going on now?
All right, let's see here. So, checking these directories here. Really? His password is password? I can't believe that. All right, so we got directories here with Spirit Blade. There's Dark Ritual. What else can I find here? Oh, wait a minute. Super secret project. I wonder what Peter's got hiding in that folder. All right, let me double click on that.
I was looking for that one all day. Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, pretty good, Winston. What's up?
I'm doing great. I was sneaking in the basement to Peter's underground complex. Looks like you hacked in just behind me. Find
yes,
anything good
I
yet?
Did. Well, you know, I found something about walking the hamster.
Freaking weirdo. So I heard a rumor that Stranger Things Season 2 is out.
Yeah, it'd be kind of hard to avoid that rumor, wouldn't it, with all the promotion that's been going on. Even though we've kind of dropped the ball with our analysis of Season 1 over at StrangerThemes.com.
Ding.
Ding, there you go. We are going to be picking that ball back up, and we're going to finish up our analysis of Season 1. That's the plan at this point. Season 2 is out and in full swing. Some people have already binged the whole thing. I've seen 4 episodes.
And, yeah, I haven't even touched it, and I have friends who every time I see them, they're chomping at the bit. Have you seen it yet? I'm like, no.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. There's some good stuff so far in the new season. This is, I look back at season 1, most of my enjoyment from it was nostalgia based. I saw someone put on Twitter, Stranger Things is a story about me. It's so true, because, you know, 1984, I would have been right around the age that these kids would have been. Thinking about season 1 and the nostalgia, and I think I even mentioned this, I have to agree that I really did feel like the story was stretched out a little bit too far. They could have told the same story in 4 or 5 episodes.
I have to agree. I really think they could have told the same story in about 2 episodes, but
you got to flesh it out a little bit more than that. Come on. but it's looking like probably season 2 is going to be much of the same. There's 9 episodes. Originally, there was talk that there was going to be 13, but it looks like there's only 9 this time. It is a little bit drawn out. I am noticing that. And maybe it's, you know, maybe that's the studio, Netflix coming them saying, look, you can't just put out 3 episodes. We need more than that, because we need people to binge, you know?
Right.
So, and I think I've nailed on why the Duffer Brothers have stretched out the story. I think it really truly is that they want to get as much nostalgia in each episode as possible, because as you've indicated before, something that you read, they said it is a love letter to the 80s. And if they're going to write a love letter to the 80s, they're going to need to take the time writing that love letter.
You
right?
want to make it long and poetic. I get it.
Yes. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. And so one thing that you'll want to keep your eye out for, I can't remember which episode exactly it is in season 2, but you'll want to keep your eye out for the homage to Poltergeist. Because it was just, I mean, it just nailed me. It was, I saw it, I'm like, oh, Poltergeist.
Nice.
it was really a nice little homage that they did.
Nice. My son recently referred to static as a special effect that some people use to make transitions on YouTube videos. So
that's not but yeah, I mean, season 2, I mean, so far, I mean, I like the story. I like the kind of the idea behind the plot, and I don't think I'm giving too much away when I say that it's really the story of, you know, again, it's about Will, and he's stuck between 2 worlds. He's stuck between the upside down and the world that we're in. And there's this tension in him between these 2 worlds. And on one side is all the evil and the nasty stuff that's in the upside down, and on the other side is the good. And I mean, obviously it's not a perfect analogy, but seeing that tension in the character of Will, and seeing that tension so far playing out in season 2, it is the only thing that's kept me watching.
Well,
because
that's,
I find it interesting.
That's really good, and it's a good callback to season 1. We kind of want to touch on what season 1 had done, because season 1 was really all about transitions. It was all about growing up, and you know, I think we spoke before about how each of the characters has their arc where they have to transition from the stage of life that they are in to the next part. You know, to their next stage of life. You know, the being stuck in between sounds like the next logical step in that story. So that really does make good sense. I do love the construction of season 1. I thought it's very well put together. Really long, overly long. I wasn't a fan of the pacing, but the story structure itself was really really good. The way the boys had to transition from being kids into being teenagers, the way the teenagers are on the cusp of becoming adults, the way the adults, you know, are learning to leave certain responsibilities behind, you know, as they and assume broader responsibilities themselves. And I thought all that was really thematically excellent.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, the themes that are there, they're great, and it's fun to talk about them. It's fun to discuss those themes. It really gives you an opportunity, I think, to have some conversations with people because most people who watch entertainment, they don't really analyze it, and they don't realize they don't understand the worldview that's being projected to them until you point it out. And that's really kind of the point of a story. A story is not meant to be overt. It's not meant to, in your face, tell you, hey, this is what I want you to believe. It presents it to you as fiction so that it can kind of subvert your conscious mind and present that worldview to you. And so when we're watching entertainment and we're looking at it, it's good to see what are the Duffer Brothers trying to say. Maybe they're not necessarily trying to say anything except for, hey, the 80s were really cool and we're writing a cool story around it, but it leaks into their it subconsciously or unconsciously rather, while they're writing, leaks into that story.
Right. So maybe, you know, it's not really things, what are they trying to say, but what where are they coming from? You know, what does right. this say? What does this say about them, or really, by extension, what does this say about us? You know, it's why Jesus taught in parables. You're exactly right. It's the whole inception thing. If somebody tells you something, it's instinctual. It's part of our nature to, yeah, well, prove it. You know, I don't really believe it, or are you sure? But if we are able to latch on, if we are able to apprehend a concept or a truth for ourselves, it's so much more likely to stay with us, you know, to become part of our thinking.
Sure. We talked about a lot of that in season one. There's more for us to talk about in season one about that, and I'm looking forward to doing that with you on Stranger Themes. And season two, who knows what's going to happen there. But I'm looking forward to finishing up the season and seeing what happens with the boys and some of the new characters that are in the show. Sean Astin is in there. Paul Reiser's in there. So they've got some good actors in there that so far appear to me to be portraying some really great characters. And some great, you know, stereotypes from the 80s, you know, because really, you know, I will let you know that Sean Astin plays a guy who works at Radio Shack. So
I miss Radio Shack. I spent so much time there.
Yes, exactly. So I think you're going to like his. I think you're going to like his character.
You know? Nice.
I'm sure there are people out there who listen to this podcast who have watched Stranger Things or are thinking about watching Stranger Things or whatever the case may be. I would encourage you to watch it and just keep an eye out. Keep an eye out on what is being said. Where are the Duffer Brothers coming from, and how do you relate or not relate to that? Because some of the things you'll be able to relate to just based on your age, some of the things you'll be able to relate to because of your worldview, and it's just the opposite. You won't be able to relate to some things because of your worldview or because of your age. So take a look at it, see what's being said, really examine it. And in the meantime, I'm going to be looking at what's in this folder about walking the hamster.
All right, I'm going to lock down this system. You go and plunder all the goods.
All right, sounds good.
All right, well, I think that's all we're going to do for this very special bootleg episode of the Spirit Blade Underground. Thank you for listening to us in our rambling, and I hope you've enjoyed our segments and gotten something of value out of it. Drew, you have any closing thoughts for us?
No more closing thoughts other than, can I press that big red button
press
now?
Button.
All right. Bye, everybody.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at christiangeekcentral.com.
For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit spiritblade.com. Thank you for listening.
All right, well, I can't thank enough John Wilkerson and Matt McKinney and Drew Rubb and Ken Harmeyer for coming together with me at the literally at the very last minute to put together a very special bootleg episode of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. You know, the Bible says that they will know that you are Christians by the love that you bear one another, and this really is our way of showing some love to Pater and to the whole community, to Pater for being the glue that holds the Spirit Blade Underground, that holds Christian Geek Central together, and to the community for being a community that can be held together by that kind of glue. And finally, where would the Spirit Blade podcast be without a moment spent seeking the truth? And the single most important truth that I could possibly help anyone to latch onto is this. God has placed eternity in the heart of every man. He has given every person a conscience that testifies within themselves of their own sinfulness and their own sinful nature, a sinful nature that separates us from God. But God has come down to earth personally to create a bridge across that separation between himself and us, and has made that bridge known to us through divine revelation in the written word of God. All of us, all of those that you've heard on the podcast tonight, we can be found on the forums, the Christian Geek Central forums. And if you have questions, if there is something that you want to know about the scriptures, do you want to know why we think they are reliable? Do you want to know why we think they are consistent? Do you want to know why we think they are the divinely inspired word of God? We will be absolutely more than happy to engage with you over those subjects and to discuss those with you. But you know what? It doesn't need to be that complicated. At any moment, you can listen to the cry of your own conscience. You can call out to God and say, God, make this known to me, reveal to me your Son, your Savior, your plan, and He will do so. The Bible promises that those who call upon Him, who call upon His name, will in no way be cast out. I don't have any special words. I don't have any special prayers. All I have is a very simple promise from God. So like John said when I was talking to him, take some time, think about it, think about what you believe, consider it, engage with it, and just when you are ready to take that next step, whether it's to engage with the material some more, to engage with the scripture some more, meet us on the Christian Geek Central forums and let us do that there, or just say, God, teach me, and then take the next step. Again, thank you all for listening to the podcast. I tend to ramble, and that's my cue to sign off.